One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Come get some. Beware, I live.
IGN Games Coop. Anyway, Big Red, it's a cream soda. It's red, mm-hmm. And it's from the Midwest.
It's a fake cream soda.
And I've had it.
You've had it?
I've had it.
Mm. Is it the best soda you've ever had?
It tastes like shit.
Cool.
Okay, but how does cream soda taste?
All right.
Like shit. The worst soda. Worst soda.
Good.
Just so you know, I'm not bleeping either of those.
we're not rolling it.
But we are now.
We can't bleep the truth.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Tina Amini.
Cream soda's good.
And Sam Claiborne.
Every week, Damon.
And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about what we've been playing in lieu of any big new releases. We're going to talk about whatever happened to box art. But first.
That's a good one.
Justin, we just launched a new IGN store.
How does Damon sit in his seat?
There are a lot of good butt first jokes happening in the Facebook.
How does Damon game. jump into a pool?
did you see how Damon back out of his garage?
Yeah, that was really good. They're all good. I'm very proud of all of you. But Justin, we just launched the IGN store this week.
Yeah, you can go to store.ign.com and you can buy all your Game Scoop merchandise. I think the Game Scoop pullover fleece is very cozy and warm and nice. But what's exciting is that we also have a lot of other stuff. So there's Star Wars shirts and Nintendo shirts and Marvel Comics, DC Comics. All of it's officially licensed. There's no knockoffs.
My Mothra shirt is not available.
But Justin's shirt is not either.
No
Bird shirt. Neither is mine.
But Tina's jacket
exactly.
is also not available.
There's IGN pins on it, but not available.
If you're listening to this show, you can go to store.ign.com and save 10% off all GameScoop merch by putting in Scoop10 at checkout.
Is it really just applied to GameScoop merch?
Yeah.
Yes. So the GameScoop stuff is like our best-selling items now, and I want to keep it that way. So everyone out there in Scoop
that
Nation, that's true.
Okay,
GameScoop is number one. NVC is a very close number two. Clearly we have to bury them.
All right, Pear. Yeah. We're going
to
bury
People
Pear.
Could also hold off and come to our PAX panel and get shirts for free because I think I'm going to have some spares.
Mm. No, they should buy them, please.
Is that true?
It is.
Are you sure?
It's definitely true that I have the spares.
Are we promising things we can't deliver?
Okay.
But I haven't
But it'll
up.
Be like two of them.
Yeah.
So still buy your shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
we'll see.
I think everyone out there should still buy their GameScoop shirts.
Damon, the last thing I'm going to say is I can see what people search for on the store that doesn't return a result.
Okay. So they've been searching for...
Godzilla is up there.
Ooh,
there
you go. We don't have a Godzilla shirt?
So that gives
that's
us
just again. Damon. He checks every day.
Is there Godzilla shirts today? So that gives us a hit list of like stuff that maybe we should look into for the future.
Okay. What's another one?
Sonic the Hedgehog is up there. Mm.
What's another one?
Final Fantasy.
What? Keep going.
Is Nicely Job one of them?
It's 15th on the list.
I know. Nicely Job was not one of them.
But people have been demanding a Nicely Job shirt.
Mm-hmm. Or we have Top Men on it.
They want a Nicely Job shirt and they want a Butt First shirt.
How would you spell Butt First?
You know, it depends on how it's being used.
Okay.
Depends on the graphic.
Mm-hmm. And then, Sam, you mentioned our PAX panel that's coming up next weekend. The once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, a February 29th GameScoop panel at PAX East.
Well, I mean, it could happen
4 years from now.
What do you think, 10 more times in our lifetime?
No.
That would give us 40 years of GameScoop to survive.
No, because it's going to be the 569th episode, and that's never going to happen again.
That's true.
On February 29th.
Mm. All right, let's say in 40 years, we'll meet back on leap year and do another GameScoop at PAX.
Okay.
Nothing could interfere.
It's 7:30. Our PAX panel is 7:30 p.m. Saturday night in the Dragonfly Theater.
Seems like a pretty good slot.
Required attendance for all PAX East attendees.
Mandatory.
Mm-hmm. Mandatory. Mm-hmm.
Well, no.
You'll need a note from your doctor if you're not going to be there.
I guarantee you all we'll be talking about is how warm we feel after having been outside.
Mm-hmm. We're not used to the cold anymore. We're in California.
Okay. All right, let's get into the episode here. Some of us have hard outs. Some of us have other things that we can't spend all day just scooping our asses off.
But in 40 years, we can come back and finish this episode.
That's true. I want to talk about how much the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X might cost, because we're hearing lots of reports that scarce parts are driving up the manufacturing costs. Above $400, could be $450, could be even more than that. And the reason why I think that could be a big deal is because, quite frankly, my dear, there has never been a successful console launch that cost over $400. Just never has been.
Yeah, so you dug into some data about that?
Well, all you have to do is look at how much consoles cost when they launched. Only the PS3 and the Xbox One X, in terms of popular mainstream consoles, cost more than $400 at launch. Both of them were failures at launch. Okay.
That's really interesting. I've never thought about that before. Mm.
So the 3DO launched at about $800.
Yeah, and what happened to that?
It failed at launch.
Trip Hawkins is, I don't even know.
He's rolling over in his grave.
Now, the Virtual Boy launched for $250 at launch.
Which one?
Yeah. The Virtual Boy.
Yeah, which is... It just goes to show, even if you do come in under $400, you're not guaranteed success.
All right. So the Damon rules apply still.
Huh. Thank you.
Well, so the PS3, you're saying, was just compared to the Xbox 360 at launch, it never caught up.
Well, I think it eventually...
The expensive system in our time.
The PS3 ended up okay, but it was very dicey for a long time.
Yeah. And it was $600-ish at launch?
$599 US.
There were two SKUs, $500 and $600.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. That was crazy at the time.
Well, it also colored the entire conversation around the consoles, and so that became the biggest thing people were talking about, thinking about, this isn't really affordable.
Yeah. And then the Xbox One was $500 because they tried to shoehorn the Kinect into it. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted that. So I just don't know, what if the PlayStation 5 is actually $450 or more, what does that mean? Are gamers okay with that now?
And that's just for that $450 is the report, is that that's just the cost of the parts to Sony. And clearly, the actual process of manufacturing it, putting it in a box, marketing it, shipping it, Sony's cost alone is going to be well over $500.
Yeah.
If the $450 cost for parts is accurate.
Yeah. And for comparison, the PS4 cost them, I believe, $381 to manufacture each one.
Oof.
So they were
start.
Yeah. So they were either making a tiny profit or breaking even when they sold those consoles. So,
and we know from history, the general idea is not to make a profit on your console, but to make it on software.
Unless you're Nintendo.
and they're trying to make the profit on the hardware?
Nintendo's always had a bit more stringent about that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's more about building a user base and then selling to them with whatever exclusives, et cetera, and trying to beat out your competition by not building it in with a Kinect.
Yeah.
And which I liked.
I did too. They now have a streaming service to kind of point people to, too. I think they want to get you subscribed and using this console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bigger push towards all of those services and software systems.
PlayStation Now, you're referring to?
Yeah.
And xCloud for Microsoft.
Right, for Microsoft, yeah.
Console generations are whack, man.
How so?
I just every single time there's a new console generation, it's just an opportunity for you to lose your entire customer base. How is that a way to run a multi-billion dollar business where we don't know how many people are going to be playing PlayStation 5 in 12 months.
You got to hit Apple levels where you just have guaranteed users every time.
That's what I think we're going to see more, not less, half step consoles. I think there's going to be every 2 years, some new PlayStation and new Xbox, to help try to lock in your player base and keep them around. And then if someone is a super fan and wants to upgrade each time, great. But if not, maybe they'll skip one or two cycles.
Is it unrealistic as the years roll on, as console generations roll on, is it unrealistic to not expect consoles to become more expensive? They've always been like $300 and $400.
Yeah, you like double negated it, and it confused me.
Yeah, it confused me too.
Repeat that question.
Is
it not possible?
Is it unrealistic to expect consoles to always launch at $400 or under?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
There's definitely a psychological
perpetuity.
Something. We talked about those $60 games, right? Like, it's hard. Like, yes, $400 15 years ago was a lot more money than it is today, but it's still hard to justify spending $500, $600 on a new game console.
Sounds like a lot.
Sounds like a lot. Exactly.
Well, that's why they have the different SKUs, I guess, and that's also an Apple iPhone model where it's like, we'll have the cheaper model and then the more expensive model for the people that really want the best experience out of each of these things.
Yes, but only Microsoft is rumored to have different SKUs.
Yeah, these different.
That's actually interesting. Like, I wonder if PlayStation is going to be forced into having.
Right, just to have the options for people. Yeah. But it is the same with games because $60 doesn't really cover the cost of production for a video game. It's just what we've become, what's standardized, what we're used to, what we're comfortable with. Because the second you start elevating that price, it's like you start to get choosier about what games you're going to buy.
We all used to. Speak for everybody, but I remember the iPhone being, you know, something that you either subscribe, you know, what was like a payment plan that you could do with your cell phone service.
Yeah.
And I remember the price for them outright was always like crazy. It was like, whoa. You could pay $30 a month or it's like $600.
$1,500.
But then now it is like, you can't do that anymore. And like every phone is $800 or $900 or $1,100. Yeah. And like, people just kind of eat that now.
Well, but maybe I think most people pay on their phone bill. Like their Verizon bill just includes, you know, you're going to pay $30 a month for 2 years and then you just have this phone.
Maybe they'll have like a turn in. And also if you're a subscriber, some sort of discounted rate in the future.
Well, so Xbox is doing that.
Xbox,
you can pay a monthly fee. You can. It's actually an incredible deal. I'm a little bit like, Microsoft is in such a weird spot because they're doing so much awesome stuff that's like not really getting the attention that they probably deserve with Game Pass being so great and their backwards compatibility being so great. But like, you can get an Xbox One X today, you know, and I think you get Game Pass for a year. So, you know, every first party Microsoft game, and then you just pay a monthly fee and then they send you an Xbox One X. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just part of this subscription. Yeah. Like, it seems great. I feel like there's probably some catch hiding in the fine print, but on the face of it, like, that seems really smart, and I think that that's the future.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say it would be really great if you could do that, and it would also be the next console, and the next console, and the next console.
Exactly.
So, like, in my life, I can be like, I subscribe to Xbox, and that just means that I can play all the games and then have the new systems as they come out.
Yep.
You know, and if the goal is that install base and you're rewarding your consistent, loyal users, that's how you retain them.
Yep. Oof. And you get Game Pass.
We're seeing that with TV now and, of course, cell phone and services and stuff. It's like we do just kind of accept these subscription service plans now.
Especially the more mainstream, like having a gaming console becomes, the more likely it is that the services and the packages are what's going to be important, because people aren't going to be as in the weeds with all of the console worry stuff that everybody else talks about. It's going to be like, what's the best deal in this case?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to bring it back around to your, like, what are the consoles going to cost? Mm. I think we're going to see a $400 and a $600 Xbox, and I think we're going to see a $500 PS5. So I think it's just going to thread the needle right in between them.
That would be in a really interesting situation, because then I don't know how many people are going to think the $400 Xbox is a more attractive deal than the $500 PS5.
It makes it tough to message
Xbox in the better situation, because they're like, we have this high-end one.
They have the two options.
That's like really, really sexy for a lot of people. And then like the low-end one, it's like, well, I might as well just spring for that.
It does sort of, I think I agree, Sam, that like that gives them
300 and a 500, and Xbox at a 400 and a 600.
The
odds and evens.
If it were 4, 5, 6 that way, that gives Xbox, you know, the leverage on both ends, right?
It really
does. We have the cheapest entry into next gen, and we have like the most high end console. Yeah.
But they're currently playing console chicken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where you don't announce your price.
And Nintendo just puts out systems at the 50 levels. So there's like 3 or 50.
And then Nintendo has Isabel show up in their halfway in their direct, and then Justin gets misty eyed. I just love Animal Crossing so much.
I'll buy another Switch. I don't even need one.
Yeah, I was gonna.
Okay, I'm ready.
Good timing. Good timing, Sam. Cool. As we transition into our next topic, let's share what we've been playing. And I think we can finally talk about, finally, after all these years, we can talk about The Witcher 3.
The hottest new game on the market.
First of all, was that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
That was Shadow of the Ninja, in honor of it coming to Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah, that's not a great game, although I've heard people say that they do like it.
I also thought it was TMNT. Konami?
It has great music. No, it's like Natsume. But
doesn't it sound a lot like a Konami game?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Witcher, man. So you just started playing.
I've been playing for a couple weeks now.
And you have two.
Yes.
And I started playing the DLC. What are you playing in The Witcher?
Gwent.
Yeah. If I'm not playing The Witcher, but if I were, it would probably be Gwent.
Oh, yeah?
Thronebreaker, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's not just us. Like, seriously, after the show came out, a bunch of people started playing it. And I saw that coming, you know, going around a little bit. But then in our office, I keep on like having people turn around when I'm talking about Witcher. Mm. And there's so many people playing right now. Mm. It's very funny. All needed a big RPG this year, and nobody gave us one. And look what we had to do.
Yeah.
Tina, do you remember the stat on, there was some news about how much money they made off The Witcher? I think it...
Oh, like Steam sales?
Yeah.
Recently? Right after the show launch, because everyone was like, what is like, this thing that I like?
I'm paraphrasing. I think it's like $50 million or like some crazy amount of revenue they've earned in like, you know, since the show came out on the game.
I'm also paraphrasing a stat that like purchases increased by like 300% after
crazy.
The show.
I remember that percentage increase,
And so, of course, the author hates the game. And just watches this and just shakes his head.
How does the author feel about the show?
The author is just a crusty man, and like his interviews are great. He just doesn't give a S.
I think he said something like it would be inappropriate for me to comment on the show because it's just such a different entity or something like that. It was very cryptic.
Well, that's actually a fairly diplomatic, like they're making their own thing. Like, you know,
which to be fair, totally is.
Yeah,
it's just weird how little control authors can lose on their stuff. To be that out of it, to be like,
gotta be good with your negotiations. Make sure you get those royalties.
And I cannot imagine the feeling of like you created this character in this world, and now there's a version of it, the most well-known version of it, that you have no like. What if the character doesn't look like that? Well, you know,
he didn't write a single word or line or instance for that game.
Yeah,
it's so crazy.
Yeah,
and like legally, they're like, that's not yours.
You said so on this paper.
Yeah, you said so.
In 1990.
But he's very late. So also, I'm sure he's sleeping. He's crying into his bed of money.
Well, yeah.
What if he's not? What if it's like the which is not true, the rumor about the Tetris creator, you know? He never made any money.
Well, the Witcher author, it was very acrimonious. And then they settled it. You know, the CD Projekt paid him a lot more money to sort of put that to bed. And now the two of them are friends again.
That's right. Yeah. They like revisited that negotiation. Mm-hmm.
But the story about the Tetris creator has a happy ending because after he made Hattris, he was just rolling it.
Wordtris. So here's been this is my experience with The Witcher recently is that I'm very stuck because it's not like riding a bicycle. You go back to playing a game like that and I'm like, why did I have all this equipment in these slots? Like, I have no idea why it was all there. It's like, it is seriously like picking it up for the first time and it's vaguely coming back to me. So I'm playing the DLC, which is kind of standalone with my character and it's great and everything. And I come into work, I'm like, Damon, Tina, like, what's up with this meter? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, why do I?
Why are there two dodges?
Exactly. That was another
one's
one.
A roll.
What's up with the skill tree that's on the right side of the skill tree that's not the skill tree? They have no idea. They've been playing this game for weeks. No idea.
That's not true.
What are the three meters that fill up next to?
We already went through this. One is for the your red sign. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One's your experience. One's your stamina.
Yeah.
What's the
red one?
Isn't that your health?
What's the red one?
There's the main red one, and then there's the curved red one.
It fills up with three
one.
Things. It's like it's when you're mid fight. I think what it is, it's like you're like enraged and on a roll. And
I think it's an adrenaline thing.
On a roll meter. More games need to have an on a roll meter.
We watched it, and yours like drain again.
Yeah, I think it's an adrenaline thing. Yeah,
well, whatever. Anyway, the game is so complicated.
There's a lot going on.
And I'm actually not making fun of Damon and Tina. I'm kind of making fun of the game.
Really?
It's overly complicated and crazy. I remember by the end of it thinking like how much I'd wrap my head around it. It was so great. But it is really funny seeing it from a distance now. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, there's like two games. There's one that's just the menus. And then there's the actual like you're talking to NPCs. You're fighting things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a normal video game, you know, scaffolds, right? Like it layers on new systems and new stuff slowly over time. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily through like heavy tutorialization. But that's just how video games work. Yeah. Start out simple and then get more complex. And then like you're saying, to pick that up midstream where you're just bombarded with meters and story. And it's like, I don't know how any
But also, in my opinion, it starts off complicated because it's like, here's all this alchemy and crafting stuff that you don't understand how to do because you have tiers of ingredients that turn into other ingredients. Yeah. But then you have to go to this NPC to craft these things.
But it only just scaffolds more stuff on top of that.
Exactly. So it starts off really convoluted and then adds on more.
Did you guys ever use an oil?
Well, I haven't gotten any oils yet.
Look, I played that game for like 100 hours and I've never used an oil. All right. Why would I put oil on my weapon? Everything just dies when I hit it with my sword. It's so meaningless. And then, you get skill points. You can put them into like skills, which seems like a good idea, or you can put them into alchemy. And I look at that and it's like, get 10% more crafting from your crafty bonus. I'm like, who cares?
I feel like that's like end level stuff where you've already maxed out like your vitality and all of your strength abilities and your signs and whatever else.
And suddenly you're like, I can collect so many more flowers.
That's high level gameplay, yeah.
Well, Witcher 3 is 5 years old now. And I've talked about before how I played it when it first came out and it didn't grab me. And it wasn't because I hated it. It just like didn't really get its hooks into me. And then something else came out and I moved on. And I always thought, I hear such great things about it, I should go back to it someday. I finally have, and I actually, I'm level 8. I've been playing it for a couple of weeks, a few hours every night. And so I'm understanding now, finally, I think, why people like this game. I'm super enjoying it. But it is true that it takes a long time to sort of like settle into the game.
Yeah.
I think a lot longer than most games, like we're just talking about, it's more complicated than most console RPGs, I think. And CD Projekt Red, their legacy is CRPGs, which tend to be more complicated than console games anyway. So I think the selling point for me, the draw to me is the storytelling, and then the quests. Like the quests, they go on for so long, so much longer than you'd be used to in even like a Fallout. The quests just drag on and they branch off, and it's pretty cool how long you spend with these characters.
You can actually fail certain parts of a quest if you don't go down the line of tasks in the right way. So I've gotten to really looking at reading all about it and then looking at what are the like little segments like, I have to go to the beggars first to make sure that I talk to them to get the intel that I need to go to then do this other thing. Otherwise, if I go to do this other thing first, I fail the quest line with the beggars. And so you don't have this option that later comes in handy. And it's so intertwined with one another. And it's
when
nice
quest fails pops up.
Yeah,
it does happen though.
It does.
You just miss that content.
But there's full quests you can fail, and then there's certain parts of quests you can fail. And it doesn't mean you fail. It just means like that option is no longer available to you, so you have to go the violence route instead of maybe like being able to bribe someone down the line, something like that. So it's very cool that you have to think on that level about it. You have to be that invested and engaged, and not a lot of games will do that.
When I first turned on the game, it loaded my save and I was like in somewhere. I was like, where the hell am I? It's like waking up from going to the dentist office or something. And it was like, quest failed, this one. Quest failed, this one. And as I ran around and was like trying to figure out how to get on my horse, it kept on going, quest failed, this
one. Why?
Because I think I'd chosen some path in the game. There was an inevitable thing that it blocked off everything.
Or maybe you left a city and it was like, well, I guess you're done with that.
Right? Yeah, but I definitely beat the game too. So this was my last save before that, I think. I
wonder if that was a weird bug.
No. I think it was like there's all these, political factions you can align with. And I like it's like Fallout. If you don't do Brotherhood of Steel, then you're not going to ever do the Brotherhood of Steel.
So if you turned off the game right after beating it, maybe you were closed off of several other paths.
And I don't know if I've beaten the game in my save yet. It's really hard for me to tell.
Weird.
But it doesn't matter because the thing I'm playing is way off and doing its own thing. It's in a fairy tale land. And it's really cool, Blood and Wine. But I was going to say, Geralt is such a cool character in this game, and he's so awful in the show. And I love his character. Too. He's funny. The dialogue is like Mass Effect, where you choose the meaning of what you're going to say, and then he says it his own way, which I love. He always says something really, really goofy, and he has little eye rolls and like is smiling. He's just likable.
Yeah.
That's so different than the TV character.
Yeah, that was my takeaway too. And then, Tina, you're playing on Switch.
Yes, so I just got an upgrade, a visual upgrade.
So lucky.
Can you tell a difference?
Yes, you can, but as I told Sam, from one potato to another potato. So it's still a little bit blurred out. Like anytime I share screenshots, people are like, well, how did you take, like, did you compress it through your PS4 and then through your email and then through Twitter?
No, I just used it.
It's playable in motion, but then when you see the still photo, it's like, ooh.
I also saw my friend playing on PS4 recently, and I was like, oh my God, the colors, it's amazing. So I'm a little bit in my own corner, not realizing until I see actual screenshots.
That means
that's what I'm missing.
You can go to the next gen now just by starting to play on PlayStation 4.
Exactly. Yeah, for Witcher anyway.
There are, I will say, games 5 years old, there have been games released since that do traversal better, I think. Like Breath of the Wild and Assassin's Creed Odyssey feel better to just move around the world.
That was the first game to have a horse that could follow a path.
I appreciate the path.
It's true, but if you want to make turns.
Yeah, sometimes there's a fork in the road.
Yeah, and you're like, what?
There's a 50% chance that he's going to take the wrong direction in the fork.
Yeah, and just slam into something. Calling him is always interesting because he's like ending up in some barbed wire somewhere.
But
like,
does
where did
show
this come
up.
From?
At least the horse shows up. There's not a lot of realism to Roach. So Roach just can just
appears behind you.
Yeah, I like that. Like,
yeah, that's
game
fine.
Needs that.
Oh, for sure.
And then Roach is always fine. You know, Roach can't get hurt or anything.
I don't like that he calls all horses Roach. I like the personal.
Roach.
Yes, and I like the personal connection that you had with your horse in Red Dead, where there are different names, there are different breeds, you create different connections. But I just call all horses Roach.
So I've read 8 of these GD books, and they suck. That keeps coming up. It's like, you know, The Witcher, you know, The Witcher calls all horses Roach. And I don't get what that joke is or what
there's also an NPC whose name is Roach, but spelled differently. And so that becomes confusing.
Well, it's Roche, right?
Yeah, but doesn't he kind of pronounce it as?
I don't know.
Maybe I'm just hearing what I want to hear.
Yeah, there's a, should I tell the DLC joke?
Well, I don't remember what it is.
Well,
as long as it's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just there's a quest line in the DLC where the character's name is De La Croix.
Oh, yeah.
And you keep on finding like monogrammed stuff that says DLC.
That's pretty cute.
It's clever.
That's pretty good. I mentioned to Sam, there's a Pulp Fiction Easter egg in there too. When you're moving through a castle and two guards are just standing there talking and they're like, should we bring out the gimp?
No.
The other one says, the gimp's sleeping. Maybe we should wake him up. It's pretty good. Anyway, what's the next big game coming out? Is it Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah.
I think it's Fallout 4.
Or
that's where we're all going to play next, right?
Half-Life. Yeah.
Fallout 4?
Yeah, or Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, after after Witcher 3? Yeah. Anyway, well, my point was I'll keep playing Witcher 3 at least for the next couple weeks until whatever the next big game that comes out is.
Well, the next big game that comes out for real is Animal Crossing, but you're going to abstain.
I'm just going to keep playing Witcher
3. And Final Fantasy
VII. Stay the course with Witcher 3.
Which you're going to abstain from too.
Well, depending on how that shakes out.
Okay.
I don't know. And I'm just very skeptical about that.
And then Doom, which I think you're going to love.
I'm definitely going
to love it. Half-Life VR, no? Or just, was that push more? Yeah, no.
We're going to have to figure out how to put that thing on our faces, though. I don't think anybody here... Do you own VR?
No.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, you know, we have lots of VR in the office.
Yeah. Well, he means like a personal one that you feel comfortable wearing on your face that 20 other people haven't touched in the last 20 minutes. Yeah.
Or specifically like the 20 sick people in the office that tend to play VR more than other people.
We got the flu.
Oh, that's a good point. I actually never put that together. That's good. Mm-hmm. Justin, you still Ring Fit Adventuring?
No.
No, I guess you gave up.
Or
did you beat it?
It does have an end eventually. No, the store, I've been working evenings.
That's
so
true.
I haven't been playing much or doing much except getting that ready to go.
He means he works in a grocery store after work.
Yeah, it's very sad. San Francisco, y'all. It's wild out here.
Hey, I work in arcade on weekends. Damon, if Justin said you should borrow Ring Fit here and gave you his ring, would you use it?
I don't,
here in the office? The
ring? No, just like in general. Would you borrow his Ring Fit ring?
I don't think there's anything unhygienic about the ring.
Well, okay.
Right?
I mean, you sweat all over it.
Okay, well, now I don't want to use it.
But
that's what life's for.
But it has the part that you're holding on to are pads that are Velcro, and you can take them off and wash them if you need to.
Hey, how would Damon borrow Justin's Ring Fit?
That doesn't make any sense.
But first,
we're going to move.
No? Okay.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Use your hands and your legs.
I don't know. You can use it how you run your own home.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like...
No. No.
Big Tony style.
Big Tony style. Yeah.
We didn't do it. It's the power of...
I apologize for that one.
There are two G's in big, so you have to say it that loud. Okay. Big Tony style writes us after a long absence and says...
You know, BTS has been on... Yes. BTS has been on GameScoop longer than I have.
That's what BTS means.
Mm-hmm. Not behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. He says, as retail seems to be less and less relevant, I feel like box art goes largely unnoticed nowadays. Mm. I miss the days of walking through my local Blockbuster, poring over a game's box art to pick out a game to play on the weekend. Are there any notable games with standout box art from this generation that the Omega Cops have taken notice of? What are some games from your childhood with standout box art?
This generation, I have no idea. Do you guys pay attention to that
stuff? Yeah, it's weird.
This may be
slipping my mind.
Wonder the question, are icons the new box art? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the icons on your home screen?
Like I can picture controls, like the big white letters and her going like this.
Yeah. Right,
but I've only seen that as a code in my...
Right, exactly.
Or Borderlands, right? That was revealed box art, but it wasn't especially...
Borderlands,
right, because
Borderlands
that one was a good
one.
Yeah, that's true.
It's colorful.
And it's always the collector's editions, like the metal boxes. That like
really
that one was gorgeous,
actually.
Yeah, with all the roses, and they did their E3 booth in the same way.
Roses have characters' faces in them.
Yeah, I know. Super clever.
I looked at that box art a lot without ever noticing that.
That is actually probably the most notable one.
Animal Crossing art leading up to this game release has been amazing. It's irresistible. Everybody's pre-ordering special editions of it and stuff like that because it looks so cool.
I do remember writing a story in my former Kotaku days about the BioShock Infinite box art because that was actually very controversial.
Because it was
the first
guy
thing that came up. I actually forget what everyone's controversy was, but I created my own controversy, which was he wasn't using proper trigger finger discipline. Oh,
okay.
And then I did a whole report on like here are the box arts that do use proper trigger finger discipline.
Oh.
And it's obviously a bunch of shooters, but then there's a variety to them. So trigger finger discipline, meaning you don't put your finger on the trigger unless you're ready to actually fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this shotgun, which people pointed out is like I don't know a ton about guns, but I think it's like a bolt action something or other. Mm. So it's kind of a moot point. It's like it got its own safety essentially, but he has it slung on his shoulder and it's like, it was just dumb.
There's also rules about if you're going to have a gun, it can't be pointed directly at the person viewing the box art. It has to be off at an angle, and there's actually rules about how much of an angle it has to be pointed off to.
Really?
That's true. Are you sure?
It's like a threatening pose or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Now I want to research this.
Yeah.
Like, and it's never down the barrel?
You can't have a box art where the gun is pointed down the barrel.
Now I'm picturing Red Dead Redemption's box art. Isn't that not John Marston pointing a gun at the viewer?
Yeah. I don't think so. So I was just looking up 2019 box art, and it's not memorable in any way. Like, everything's like a montage and crappy looking.
I do remember this Gears one. Gears and then, of course, the Borderlands one.
And honestly, Control looks good. And then Star Wars, I didn't remember, but it has like a big dual-bladed lightsaber across it.
Red Dead skirting that line.
How does this work? Red Dead Redemption 2's box art absolutely has a gun pointed at
maybe it. Maybe I made that whole thing angled up, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's not pointed directly.
Hey, maybe it's for an ESRB rating.
Look up the BioShock Infinite one, though.
Maybe.
I know that's just a guy.
So there's a chance.
He's got like his finger.
There's a chance I completely dreamed and made up that whole thing. Or maybe Sam's right in that it is related to ESRB, where if you're not rated M, you can't do it.
He's got his finger on it. But there's something where you have to cock the gun in a specific way. So it doesn't matter.
The enemy is just behind him and he's being fancy about shooting him.
Being fancy about it.
And just really stoic about it.
A lot of the box art this year seems to be montages of faces, like kind of just like kind of montaged. Well, it doesn't look particularly
like the modern. Star Wars one is kind of like the Star Wars movie posters. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they were emulating some of that.
But yeah, I guess Control is something that like we liked for its style, and so that stands out as like a design opportunity for them to make cool box art.
I like the Katana Zero one just because it's really like neon colorful. Where is it?
And Untitled Goose Game, if it had box art, it would be the best box art.
I think Star Wars Battlefront had pretty cool box art, if you can see that here.
It's got an AT-AT.
It's got a lone soldier facing down an AT-AT. That was pretty cool.
That was cool.
But yeah, box art, I don't know what's going to happen as we move into a completely digital future. It must be icons, but I don't think developers and publishers put as much thought into their icon art as they
I think the Switch eShop icons are pretty good.
Well, I was going to bring that up because it turns out that Nintendo fans, a lot of them are really serious about their icons, and if there's been instances where they don't like a game's icon, they complain until the developer changes it.
And that's because like that's in your face when you fire up your Switch.
I get
like,
that too. I want to have a nice environment too.
I guess
aesthetic to what's on
your
homepage.
I get that.
Themes are also a thing, which I haven't played
not on the Switch
as much, but.
Yeah,
well, PlayStation 4, maybe that's their next box art route.
That's actually a good point. What if when you got your game, it actually themed out your system while you had it?
You can get themes.
I know you can. Yeah. That's a nice thing that like for Switch, for example, would be a cool thing. It's just you just kind of had that.
Totally.
I wish that was kind of part of
it. Seems like special editions should come with themes. Does that not happen? I don't think
themes are generally annoying to like do though, because like if that happened, then it would like special edition, you have to put in a code just to theme out your system. Like that should just be part of the experience. Like,
it's true.
Be cool.
That should be a next gen feature. I loved all the Atari 2600 box art, even though that was like, you know,
you're just
a different time
going back.
I mean, well, he was asking about favorite box.
There's a lot of rainbows and stuff. I like that.
In the Atari 2600?
Yeah, like an Activision logo was a rainbow.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And then like on the side of the boxes that has like a, you know, like for one of the companies is silver boxes with rainbow highlights on it. Mm. And it's the coolest looking box art.
I think I know the ones you mean. Like,
I know what they are. They're Exidy.
Yeah, I think you're right. Demon Attack.
There.
Demon Attack is one of them. Look up the box art for Demon Attack if you want to see what we're talking about.
And then hand painted stuff.
What about the Stampede logo?
The Stampede logo. I can show you that right now. It's on my belt buckle.
You wearing the belt buckle? You got it already? Yeah. You haven't showed it to me?
I feel weird showing people belt buckles when they're on me. When it was off, I was like, Tina, look at this. But now I'm not going to be like, look at my waist right now.
So take it off.
I'll show it to you later. I'll put on a jacket. Take it off. I could take it off. That's actually a good point.
And of course, there's really great box art examples on the NES. I'm thinking like the Castlevania, the original Castlevania, beautiful hand painted. Gradius, Light Force, those amazing hand painted sci-fi scenes.
What about Phalanx on the SNES?
Is that the banjo player?
Yeah,
that's a pretty good one.
The only box art from my youth, I'm sure I can think of more, but like the one that springs to mind is Doom. Was like a very, very, you know, I was 10 and I thought that was the coolest fucking thing I had ever seen in my life.
Not going to believe it.
and like that just like it made a mark on me and like totally set the tone for that game. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I guess the 2016 Doom had pretty cool box art too.
Yeah.
They're kind of austere box art wise, but the Zelda series used to be gold boxes with like a sword and a shield or like just a very little thing. So Zelda 1, Adventure of Link were like that. Ocarina of Time was like that.
Very classy.
The Past was like that. Majora's Mask kind of twisted it a little bit, which it did with everything. But I really, it was classy and it was like so exciting. And those games were always the highest end games when they came out. So it was like gold, like in your hands. It was like, oh man, what a cool box art.
And the gold cart?
Yeah. Of course,
and the gold cart, the box art for that, if I remember right, was
shows
embossed.
It has a window and it shows the part of it through.
For the NES original,
it's really cool. And then the Final Fantasy 1 box art in Japan is gorgeous, and it's like Amano, is that his name, that did all the Final Fantasy art and like whatever. It's great. But in America, they like were like, we have to make this look as un-Japanese as possible. And it's just like this horrible fantasy art of like a wizard and a naked guy and like a ninja looking at a castle in the sky in a sphere.
Isn't the
boxer, oh no, sorry, the boxer,
the boxer is just a shield.
Yeah, yeah, the boxer.
But just, you're probably thinking like the strategy guide. The
strategy guide cover, yeah, which was official too.
Which is interesting because I think with the dragon, I guess they're, wait, the Dragon Warrior games over here, they embrace the anime, fantasy anime art style a little bit more. Yeah. Or at least didn't try to hide it from.
Well, look up slime in the Dragon Warrior manual. It looks like a little man. It's so bad. They took the cutest, most desirably, you know, like kawaii character from Japan. They're like, no, we got to make it look like a gross decapitated head.
Yeah. Make it extreme.
Mm-hmm. Make it extreme.
All right. Let's move on. Okay. That forlorn tune is from Terminator on Sega Genesis. Oh. This is Robert Taylor in Cobb, California. From the top, I would like to say I'm a big fan and thank you all for your great content each week. But first, this last weekend, my fiance and I took a 2-hour trip south to San Francisco for a concert slash date night. After dinner, we decided to take a stroll down Pier 39 for some drinks and to check out the sights. We made our way into Bubba Gump's for a beverage when we discovered an arcade in the back of the building.
That arcade.
Since you all work in SF, you may know the place. You know the Bubba Gump arcade?
It's so bad. It's not part of Bubba Gump. It's just there's an arcade on
Pier 39. So it's Pier 39. Okay. Yeah. After a couple rounds of air hockey, I noticed they had the Walking Dead light gun game. As a huge fan of the early seasons of The Walking Dead and comic books, I just had to play it. However, I only had enough money on my arcade card for one player because I didn't feel like reloading more money onto it due to us being short on time. So I let my fiance play instead because it seemed to spark her interest. She did not grow up playing many video games nor light gun games, so I wanted to let her try. The game sets a scene of you, an unknown character, escaping a zombie-filled prison with nothing but a crossbow. The light gun, of course, was a crossbow with a crank lever on it to reload your next arrow. Needless to say, she had a blast and insisted we keep playing.
That's a good arcade gimmick.
So I'm here asking for light gun game advice for the home setting. I have a PS4, Switch, and Xbox One. I know that PS4 makes a light gun peripheral, but I wouldn't know where to start for games.
Boy.
In your experiences, have you come across a worthy purchase that the fiance and I can play at home?
Do modern TVs do light guns?
This is the main problem, I think. I think when HDTVs became a thing, light gun games went away.
The old technology of them. So the old technology used the scan lines of the TV, and it actually, like, you know, in the gun itself was able to sense where an object was based on the scan lines. So that means that no TVs use that anymore, so they have to use something else. But we have phones that can take, you know, imagery off things and put AR things in space. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that we can have nice light guns now. There's not a market for those that crosses over with anybody that I know.
Yeah.
And so I'm totally out of the loop on what light guns are now.
I had the light gun peripheral, the fancy expensive one from Namco for the PS2, and loved it. Like, I bought Time Crisis and I had Point Blank, and like that was great. But like, I just don't know. It's not a part of my life anymore.
Well, I was doing some research for this segment. I think there are virtually no light gun games released for any current gen console.
Bummer.
Until just recently, late last year, there was a new peripheral by PDP. I think it's called the Mars Light Gun. Its whole gimmick is that it's supposed to work with modern TVs. Mm-hmm. But there's only like three games that they've released for it. Like Big Buck Hunter is one of them. And then there's like some generic, that's a generic like alien shooter, probably an Area 51 sort of.
And we should point out, like, if Wii is a light gun. Like, it is an equivalent.
The Wii?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that had the Lynx crossbow training gun with it and stuff like that. So, like, that's just a different way of doing it, right? It made an infrared field, and then it kind of tracked the position of where you're aiming. Like, that's just another way of doing it. So there's clear ways of doing this with motion and cameras that would work. It's just for some reason people don't want to sit in front of their TVs with a piece of plastic anymore. And that actually extends to, Ring Fit aside, like a lot of what we're in our era-wise, because, like, we still have instruments in our house and Wii Fit boards and stuff like that. We are not in a peripheral zone right now. Like, post-connect, like, I haven't bought a peripheral for my system forever.
Mm.
But you can totally buy a Nerf Halo line now.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Like, the actual Halo
gun. That's just to shoot your friends?
Yeah, but it's like you have the needler and there's so like cool. 1,000 little Nerf bullets on it. It's really cool.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that's a great idea. We should get those.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
I think light gun games have moved into VR.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
There is that option. If you wanted to pick up a PSVR, there's a lot of cool first-person
Super
shooters.
Hot's a good one for that.
Yeah, Super Hot's great. Yeah, it's amazing. But there's also just like more typical like light gun shooting gallery games that take place in VR.
Why were light guns more fun than... I guess controllers were just so far behind that we didn't have a lot of 3D space aiming.
What are you talking about?
I'm being pulled away.
What? It's not. You have 5 minutes left.
All right. Do you want to tag somebody in for 20 yes. questions?
Okay. Well, I have one more topic we can discuss while you grab somebody.
Okay.
I just want to know if everyone, you didn't even say goodbye to everybody, Tina.
I know. Oh, well, hold on. Per, come over and show people why I must leave.
Show, yeah, like and, one of those show and tell.
Tina is not supposed to be having fun. She's supposed to be doing work.
That's yeah, true. This is work. True.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, that's all the explanation that we need.
Dad, stay out of my room.
I'm being pulled into NVC currently.
All right. The door's locked.
Tina has an appointment that's out of the office, so she has to get over there.
Okay.
Oh, that was great.
Okay, well, let's move on to our final topic before 20 questions.
Whoa.
This is Scott from sunny Australia. My name is Scott from Brisbane, Australia. Love the show. When work and my four kids have at times required a dialing back of gaming podcasts, Scoop has always stayed in the subscribe list. Thank you for your service, Scott. Mm-hmm. I've just received delivery of a flip grip for my Switch.
Cool.
To get a taste of that old school vertical goodness. I've got Ikaruga and the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection. Wow. My question
all
is,
you need.
Yeah.
What flip grip compatible games do you consider must plays? So I can help out with this. And Scott, so good call on Ikaruga. You now have the best, maybe the best shmup game of all time.
You know, I've never played that.
I mean, I just said maybe.
Yeah.
But it's great.
I've never played it.
It's great.
It is.
I should get the flip grip, and when we go to Boston, I can play that.
You should get the
flip grip. Is that a good playing game?
Yeah, I mean, can you play a arcade shooter for 5 hours?
No, but I can play it for a little bit and then take a nap.
Yep, you can do that too. Although I don't know if the flip grip is sold out, so you may want to reach out.
I have
out.
One.
Okay, you already have one.
Yeah, but I've never played Ikaruga.
So flip grip compatible, is that any game that has a tape mode can work with flip grip, or is it a specific thing they have to do?
A tate mode, yes. Any game that has tate mode that allows you to rotate the screen. Ikaruga's great. The SNK 40th Anniversary Collection has a bunch of games like the Ikari Warriors and Guerrilla War and that sort of stuff. I would recommend, pinball games are great for this. So Demon's Tilt, which I talked about recently, is a sort of a spiritual successor to early 90s.
Come on in.
Video pinball games, Alien Crush and Devil's Crush, that's available on there.
Yeah.
Welcome, Jonathan Dornbush.
Hello there.
You may have just listed this when Jonathan was walking in. Did you mention Star Wars Pinball?
That was going to be the other pinball game.
That's one I played. It's great.
Yeah. We're talking about
for Switch too. So I should just try that.
We're talking about the best games to play in vertical mode on your Switch.
Okay,
yeah. So those are good. And then also for more shooters, the two Psycho shooting collections that are both out now. Each one has like 6 games, and there are definitely more good games than there are bad in those collections. Like the Strikers series, Dragon Blaze, Gunbird. These are awesome 90s.
What a cool arcade renaissance on Switch right now.
The Switch is such a cool system because you can play it in vertical mode. Mm-hmm. Such a cool system for shooters because if you play these games on your PS4, on your big HDTV, the gameplay is only in this small sliver in the center of the screen, and then they put up these big...
Turn your TV sideways.
That would actually look pretty cool.
So that's actually a big problem when people make their own arcade machines is that they use a horizontal monitor or a vertical, and like half games are not one or the other. I mean, there's 50-50. Like you're not going to have the best of both worlds. So people now get these, I don't recommend doing this, they get a giant 4x3 monitor, which things look really good on, and then it's so big that like Donkey Kong looks fine down the strip of the middle of it.
Yeah.
But it's crazy they have to do that.
Yeah. All right, that should be some good suggestions for you, Scott, in sunny Australia. And that brings us to video game 20 questions.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Our suggestion this week comes from Ethan, last name Anonymous. Ethan Anonymous.
All right, introduce Jonathan, because he just showed up out of nowhere.
I thought we did introduce Jonathan.
You
Jonathan Dornbush,
host
of Podcast Beyond, is joining us here.
Mm-hmm. Subbing in for Tina.
You guys are both doing a show.
Called Next Gen Console Watch 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not Next Gen Console Watch 2013.
No.
If you're watching that, you're watching reruns.
Yeah.
Tune in for the new episode.
But Damon was still on it.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, you know how 20 questions work.
Yes,
Jonathan,
of course.
Right? Okay. In that case, let the questioning begin.
Jonathan, you want to start this one?
Yeah.
Ooh. Was the game released after January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Is this a Damey game?
No.
Okay, so a game that Damon doesn't like.
Okay.
Or, that, you know,
there's
just
a
not,
lot of those.
Just not know, or just wasn't like in his.
Yeah. You know.
So maybe Kingdom Hearts.
It didn't win a Damey.
Kingdom Hearts is alive.
That's true.
Was this game released on a Nintendo console?
No.
Ooh. Was this game a platform exclusive?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Did it? We don't know the year aside from after 2000.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Is this part of the contemporary console systems?
Yes, that's 5.
Wow, that's great. Okay. Contemporary not systems, not on Switch.
Not on Switch.
And not exclusive.
Was this game developed in Japan?
No.
Is this an independent game?
No.
Did this company that published this game have a press conference at the last E3?
Yeah. Well, yes-ish. Wow.
Interesting.
So,
yes-ish.
EA?
Yeah.
Devolver?
Devolver or Devolver. EA would be, yeah.
We can just ask. You can just ask.
Was this game published by EA?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. PS4 and Xbox or and or Star Xbox Wars. One game.
No, that was a total Damien game. Glad we asked.
Is this game a third-person action game?
Yeah.
Not in there.
I think you... Well, hold on.
Okay.
Mind Palace time. I think it's possible... I think third-person play is an option in this game. Mm. That's okay. Time. I think you can third or first person.
Oh. Hmm. Really?
I think. Or maybe it's just third person. It's at least third person. At least that much.
I think it's a popular battle royale?
Yeah.
Well, Apex is primarily first person. Can you play it in third?
He doesn't know that.
Yeah.
I said that last week and people got a real kick out of that. Yeah. When we were talking about something and I blew past something, like, yeah, but Damon can't answer that.
Is this game mostly, is it mostly a shooty? You shooting a lot?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So
was this game developed by Respawn?
No.
Okay. Oh. I'm assuming Anthem then.
Yeah.
And hold on. I take everything back that I just said. This is a first-person game. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
But it's still not Apex Legends.
Because Battlefield, then, or Battlefront.
There was no Battlefield or Battlefield. Oh.
Yeah, there was. There's 1 and 5.
No, of course. No.
Yeah.
I, for some reason, was thinking last year because we talked about E3 last year.
Okay.
But that had no foundation in reason.
Just a PS4. I went through the exact same thing, but it's just a PS4 and Xbox One game.
Yeah.
Well, we're presuming. We know it's a multi-console game from this generation that's not on Switch, so.
Yeah. And first person. Definitely first person.
Is this game in the Battlefield franchise?
Yes.
Okay.
So wait, there was Battlefield 1.
1 and V/5.
Was this game based in World War One?
No.
Wait, was Battlefield 1 was World War One, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it has to
Does this game have Levolution?
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, it's just Battlefield 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good work, Jonathan. Thanks for the help.
Happy to be here.
And the only reason I got tripped up on the first person thing is because halfway through, I thought we were talking about Star Wars Battlefront again. But we were.
Actually?
Then I had to, like.
You were right.
What do you mean?
Because you do play vehicles in third person.
In which one?
In Battlefield.
Oh, yeah.
Field.
Well, okay. Just vehicles in third person. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone else.
That counts.
Okay.
So that was a really smoothly run. 20 questions. For, you won.
Yeah.
We won.
Everybody wins. Everyone won. Except for Ethan Anonymous.
Yeah, don't at me.
Get nice Ben. Guy.
Don't get he says, I've been listening to your podcast since the SNES on Switch episode. Don't remember which one that is. Your podcast episodes made my 2-day trip to Myrtle Beach and back amazing. Well, I'm glad we could be
I bet we did that episode like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's always the embarrassing thing.
I thought you were going to stop amnesia. At.
Is that like a known, like if they were like, oh yeah. The infamous SNES on Switch episode.
Well, I think it was from Incident. When the SNES collection came out on Switch. Mm-hmm. We did an IGN Now for that.
It's a been great
like,
Now.
That would have been like...
Oh, is that a good one?
It's a very good
Oh, now. We rated games.
Yeah, you rated all the games.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that would have been from like last September or so. Before we go, Jonathan, we all shared what we've been playing. What have you been playing recently?
Ooh, I've been playing something for review that I don't think I can talk about, but look forward to
moving on
soon. I can say that, but that's all I can say. Other than that, I've actually been replaying Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh yeah, how does that?
I've been following your tweets.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm still obsessed with the photo mode for it. It is still one of the prettiest games I've ever played, and I love just taking constant like wildlife and photography in that game. It's nice. Great. The story stuff does not really hold up. It is one of the weirdest things where I love the action and the combat and the hunting of that game, and then when characters talk, they are just two people standing up. Apart from each other saying their lines, and then the other person says their lines.
Are they just really stiff?
They're really stiff. Okay. There's really no liveliness to any of their interactions. It's sort of a weirdly dead conversation every time, even though they have a great voice cast and they have a lot of great talent involved. It just doesn't come through in the way it's animated.
Mm. What about when the dinosaurs talk to each other?
That's the best part.
Yeah.
Do you think the sequel is going to be called Horizon One Dawn?
I've talked about this a lot on Beyond. My hope is it's that silly. I hope it's Horizon Zero Dawn.
Or Zero Dusk.
Two, or Dawn. Yeah, Horizon Zero Dusk or Horizon Zero Midday or just something inane.
Zero Dawn 2 is also really good.
Yeah.
Or it could be, man, because you could also change Horizon.
Yeah, Foreground Zero Dawn. Foreground Zero
Dawn. Well, there is an in-universe Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, that name has relevance in the world. Yeah.
Was it the satellite?
It was the military plan that essentially they enacted.
I have blocked all of that out.
I just played it a week ago.
There's like a crash space AI and all kinds.
Yeah, and so they say, like, Horizon Zero Dawn was the plan that went into action. I don't think they had the Horizon One Dawn plan. I don't know.
You're also playing the Fortnite.
I am. Yeah. Wow. I got obsessed with Fortnite.
Obsessed.
We play, my girlfriend and I play every day.
Wow.
Starting on Christmas Day, because they introduced split screen. I remember very
distinctly. From nine to five,
we're playing Fortnite.
Monday through Friday.
I don't show up for work. But no, we've been playing every day and we've been very much looking forward to, haven't jumped into season two yet, but we're going to tonight and I'm very much looking forward to it.
It's got some spy stuff in it.
Yeah. I'm really excited by it. There's a really buff cat character you can
unlock. I saw that buff
Meowth.
What a crazy Meowth.
Yeah. Incineroar looks like nothing compared to him.
It's great. That's another buff cat.
Yeah. We could probably do a top five buff cats on IGN, though.
Yeah, we could. Damon doesn't know what we're talking
about.
We should probably move on.
Big's the cat.
Anyway.
Let's just move out.
I can't name another buff cat. Maybe from the cartoon Heathcliff.
What about Thundercats?
Thundercats are pretty buff.
I gotta go.
Okay, sorry.
I brought this to the show.
We're going to go.
Your let's boss just talk isn't about, here taking you out.
Let's just talk about our top 10 Thundercats first. That is all the scoops we have for you this week. Hopefully we'll see a bunch of you at our PAX East panel next weekend. Make sure to check out the store, store.ign.com. Buy up all of those GameScoop t-shirts.
Buff cat shirts like this one.
If you have any money left over after you buy GameScoop t-shirts, maybe buy a Beyond t-shirt as well.
Oh, thanks for throwing me that phone.
Wow.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, John. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out. Woke up.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.